Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Josh Gross, Artistic Director of Puppeteers for Fears. Puppeteers for Fears is an Ashland, Oregon-based theater company that specializes in original puppet horror sci-fi musical comedies. According to their website, their shows are R-rated and not intended for children unless they're awesome. Josh has written and performed several original rock and roll musicals, including Cthulhu the Musical, which is coming to Buffalo Ironworks on Monday, June 24th. Tickets are available at buffaloironworks.com. Josh and I talk about growing up in a Shakespeare town, the power of puppets, and what it was like to bounce back after the pandemic. I hope you enjoy our conversation as much as I did.
Josh, thank you so much for speaking with me today. How are you?
I'm great. Hey, thanks for asking. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. Is there a story from your youth that connects you to the work you do now?
You know, it's funny because I actually listened to some of your earlier podcasts to kind of like get a vibe for what this was going to be like. And I heard you say that you like to ask people that question. And I was like, oh boy, because my answer is like, no.
That's okay. You know, that's okay, right? I think that that's fine.
This is a weird one. I fell into this project completely backwards. Like it wasn't something I grew up like going like, oh, I'm going to do this when a lot of people, you know, in the world of puppets, they kind of go like, oh, I just grew up idolizing Jim Henson. I was like, yeah, Jim Henson was cool, you know, but, you know, I grew up playing in rock and roll bands. And honestly, I grew up with a pretty deep and bitter hatred of theater as an art form, because I live in a town in which our central industry is a large Shakespeare festival. And it's just sort of like, it's kind of like a coal mine, except we have a theater festival instead of a coal mine, but we're still like a factory town. So there's a lot of stuff where you just get like a real bitter resentment where you're just like, I don't like that. You know, they started dragging us down to see Hamlet in like the first grade. And I was like, what even is this nonsense? Like, I don't speak this language. I'm not into whatever the heck is going on, you know? And it took until I was in college and I thought I was signing up for a screenwriting course, and I mistakenly signed up for stage writing before I saw a play like newer than Death of a Salesman. I was like, oh, look at that. This doesn't have to be dusty and boring and, you know, surreal.
What did you think you were going to do?
I mean, I was a musician. I was like, you know, I was going to be in a rock and roll band, you know, and that was the whole thing. I was really into music. I was into that really like that sort of like religious ecstasy and communion of like a sweaty, loud rock and roll show. And to me, that was exciting, and theater was dusty and boring. And I still think a lot of it honestly is, you know, and our goal with Puppeteers for Fears, the project that we're talking about today, is really to try to give theater the jolt and energy of a rock and roll show. So you go to see it and you're like, oh wow, this is fun. You know, this is like everything that I felt theater wasn't. We call it theater for people who didn't realize they liked theater, you know, because they've never been given a reason to like it before. Or a rock and roll show for people who felt that maybe they'd aged out of going to like a sweaty dance party and they want something they can sit down to experience. You know, like one of the things when we first started this project that happened is a lot of my friends who had really been fans of my band when we were younger, they were like, yeah, I just don't feel like going out anymore. You know, I got kids, I got jobs and stuff like that. And then they would come see this and they'd be like, this is great. It's just as fun. It's just as punchy, but I can sit down. Great. We found the sweet spot. We can give the old people something to sit and the young people something to feel, to like literary, to get interested in, you know, so.
Yeah, I mean, I just recently bought concert tickets myself. My friend was like, you know what? We're paying for the upgrade. We're sitting. So I'm just like nudged over to that place kind of to be there. I'm interested, being a musician, do you remember the first song you ever wrote?
The first song I ever wrote? Absolutely, because it nearly got me expelled from high school.
Oh, I have to hear that story then.
So I signed up for a music theory class in high school. I believe it was sophomore year. But the music teacher, he knew his stuff, man, but he was just sort of known as being kind of a hard ass. And, but I was really into this class because I'd gotten into guitar, and I was, you know, just loved it. And I loved everything about it. And it really just spoke to me. And one, you know, we were learning about intervals and, you know, chord formulas and all the sort of basic theory stuff that you're, you know, is really the building blocks of it. And at the time, I was kind of like the best student in the class because I was just so passionate about this material. And he comes in, he's like, all right, guys, this week we all need to pick a musical goal. And I was like, all right, I'd like to write a song with lyrics because I've never done that before. He says, you can't pick that goal. And I was like, why not? And he said, well, because what you need to do is pick a song out of this book and learn to play it. And I said, okay, then why didn't you say pick a song out of this book and learn to play it? He's like, because you're not going to do that. You're going to pick a musical goal. And I said, okay, well, my musical goal is to write a song with lyrics. He said, no, you can't do that. You got to pick a song out of this book and learn how to play it. I was like, all right. And so I told him I'd learned to play Jailhouse Rock, which was like, you know, not particularly complicated. And then I just wrote my own song and I named it Jailhouse Rock. And then he drug me into the principal's office, called my parents in, told them I was functionally illiterate and that I needed to be like put in special education. And, you know,
wow.
High school was a complicated time for many of us, myself included. But I'm the only person I know who was nearly thrown out of a music theory class for writing a song. And the weirdest part is that the song was about goldfish. Like, it was not like, it wasn't like a burn the government down, throw the teachers on the fire. You know, it was just like, the song was like about how I liked big round goldfish with like fuzzy heads. Cause at the time I just thought that was a good aesthetic, you know?
Yeah. And called the Jailhouse Rock. I love that. I think that's so wonderful.
Think about it. What is the fishbowl if not the jailhouse? You know, they swim by waggling their tail. Is that not Elvis-like in nature? You know, they're waggling their hips. Like, what is it? What is the goldfish, if not, you know, like the Animal Kingdom's Elvis?
I love that. I think they need a rebrand.
Yeah, right? Elvis and the Animal Kingdom. Died too young.
Yeah, yeah. Some of that, I feel like some of that spirit, right, probably kind of goes into the origin of Puppeteers for Fears. I feel like with Puppeteers for Fears, it sort of to me feels like, I don't know, I'd like to see a Marvel movie entitled that, right? Like, so what is the origin story for your company?
Yeah, so that's I'll give you the whole backstory. So, you know, like I said, I grew up playing in bands and then I kind of fell backwards into writing plays in college because I accidentally signed up for this stage writing course instead of a screenwriting course. And then all the people who happened to be in this class all agreed that by dumb luck, we just found like the perfect group of people. Like, cause you know, the subsequent iterations of that class were nowhere as interesting, but this was just the exact right group where everyone was a great writer. Everyone was really fun to be around. And it was like all this one-upsmanship of trying to make each other laugh more. And we just really had a great time. So I got really passionate about, you know, the possibilities that theater presented that I'd never seen before. Cause I grew up, you know, only thinking it was Shakespeare, you know, mostly a musician and, you know, these two worlds just didn't really mix very much. And I was really interested in the idea of finding a way to mix them, like writing a musical, you know, sort of like as a storytelling thing. But, you know, every time I'd see something like West Side Story, I thought it was really corny where, you know, they'd be like walking down the street and then they just start snapping. And then, you know, suddenly they're singing. It's like, wait, what's even happening right now? Because to me, it just felt very out of context. And to me, I felt like I needed something that kind of acknowledged the meta-ness of it. So it didn't seem silly. And I didn't, but you had to have the right idea for that. Like it needed to, something had to fit within that framework. And I couldn't quite find it. I was living in Idaho, working as a reporter for the weekly newspaper there. And a friend of mine who ran a theater company, who'd done one of my plays, asked if I would write something for their Halloween showcase that they were going to do. They were going to do a series of Halloween shorts. And she's like, yeah, we're going to do a thing with puppets. So it's going to be a puppet horror show. And I was like, I don't know, man, that sounds a little corny. And then I kind of realized, oh, puppet, horror, musical. If you put all of those things together, that is so moonshootingly ludicrous that no one will question any one of the individual elements. They'll all just sort of combine and people will just go, oh, you know what? I'm in for the penny. I'm in for the pound. I'm going to run with it. And I kind of asked around informally, just asked my friends. I was like, what do you think the worst, most inappropriate topic for a musical could possibly be? And they all said serial killers. So I was like, great, let's do serial killers. So I wrote this 15-minute puppet short called Ritual Murder the Musical, which, you know, it's sort of like the narration of like the serial killer sort of like camped outside like his victim's window, like singing about his like, you know, ritualistic killing process. And it was, you know, it was basically Silence of the Lambs, but with puppets as a musical comedy. And it went pretty well. So we did that again for the next year at the Halloween showcase. And then that went well. And then the third year I was going to do it again, but I ended up moving away. And I'd already written a piece. And so I'd had this third one that was unproduced. And I was just like, you know, man, it's a shame that this thing never got on stage. be fun to do it. And at that time I was living back home in Ashland where I grew up. And like I said, Ashland is the home of the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So there's just a lot of actors, you know, just kind of around, especially ones that are, you know, youngs that came to take part in the university theater program. And a lot of them are just like looking for a project, looking for something to do. So, you know, I was sort of like, oh, well, you know, there's actors around. I could probably find some people to do this, just kind of do it for funsies, do this as like a one night trilogy thing. And as I was talking to a friend about, like, I was like, I don't know, this, I think this could be a neat idea. I looked over to my left and we were at a bar and I saw this young actress who I'd seen in a show and I thought was fantastic. And I was like, you know what? I've had a couple drinks. I'm just going to go like give this a shot. So I came up and I'm sure she thought I was like hitting on her, but I like tapped on the shoulder and I was like, hey, here's a weird idea for a project. And I just kind of monologued at her for a couple minutes about, you know, this whole sort of backstory. And it was like, here's the thing, I want to do this show. And the dumb fucking luck, she had studied puppetry in college because they had done a production of Avenue Q and they so did a special one term, you know, like puppetry class to get people ready for Avenue Q. And I had just tapped the right person on the shoulder. And so she, you know, got some of her friends from the university that had been in through that puppetry class. She called a couple up, you know, and I got members of my old high school band together. And we just sort of like met up and we did this. And it turned out that our bass player, his wife was a seamstress. So like, you know, she was known for making costumes for like, you know, like local theater productions anyway. So she made some puppets for us and did this thing. And we did this as a one night only, supposed to be a one night only Halloween show. And we showed up to do this thing. And there was like a line like out the door and around the block and like people were like sitting like six deep on the floor. And it was actually like kind of frightening. Like when people laughed, the whole room shook. And I, in my life, I've never seen anything else quite like that. It was genuinely dangerous, but in like a way that felt really, really vital. And afterwards, we had 10, 15 people walk up and just say, thank you for doing anything different. And they all said that exact same thing. We're like, all right, you know, I think we hit a nerve. We found something, you know. And it's a hard thing to explain, but like growing up in the shadow of that Shakespeare Festival, there really is, it's so big that it's like, it just sort of like blocks out everything else. And, you know, anytime you want to do your own thing, people say, I don't get this. It's not Shakespeare. And we're like, but that's the point. It's not Shakespeare. We're trying to have our own culture. We don't, you know, like art should reflect society, not reflect the society of another country 500 years ago. And we were kind of the only thing doing that. And so it kind of just, we're like, all right, we found the magic formula. Let's try this again. See if people still like it. So we did a, we went back and we did a feature and we wrote this, you know, show called Cattle Mutilation, the Musical, about Bigfoot and UFOs. And we, you know, the joke was kind of like, what's something people in Oregon will think is a documentary? Oh, we'll do a show about Bigfoot, you know? And we decided to run that for 2 weekends and see what happened. And every single show sold out. So we're like, okay. So we did another one. And there's like, this time we'll run it for 4 weekends and every single show sold out. And then we're like, all right, we'll try this for 6 weekends and every single show sold out. And then we're like, all right, let's try doing this in Portland or Seattle and see what happens. And then every show sold out. And we're like, all right, let's try doing this all over the West Coast and see what happens. And then it just kept, everywhere we'd go, people just kept liking it. And so, you know, this was supposed to be one night. I never intended to be involved in any of this, but it just kept snowballing and people were really interested in it. And I'm super grateful for it. And it's so fun. It's taken me places I never would have thought. And it opens up all of these opportunities I never would have thought of, because once you sort of accept certain premises of the premise, you know, like, it just opens up a lot of interesting performance and comedy opportunities and, you know, dramatic opportunities that you wouldn't have otherwise. I mean, when you're working with puppets, they can say things that a human actor couldn't, you know, and so you can do all kinds of jokes and dialogue that you wouldn't be able to do with straight actors. You know, anything can be a character. So you can have a conversation between like a dinner plate and a softball. You know what I mean? Like it makes things really fascinating and it's a lot of fun. And then, like I said earlier, because it has this just sort of fun, raucous rock and roll spirit, it just makes the whole thing just sizzle, you know, in a way that like nothing else I think I've ever really done or been a part of.
Well, we keep talking about it as sort of like a musical. And, you know, for our listeners, I'm going to post some stuff, sort of your website and all that stuff in the show notes. But it like sort of even transcends the idea of a musical, right? Because it seems like there's like a small or a smallish puppet theater in front of the stage. And then behind that seems like an incredible kind of live rock band. So you're sort of seeing the rock band playing and the puppets in front of you. So it is like a hybrid. Am I right in saying it's like a hybrid rock puppet show, concert, musical, extravaganza?
Yeah, I mean, like, it depends a little bit on the stage we're on. Like, sometimes the band has to be kind of hidden out of sight, but usually we like to put the band off in the wings. So it's like, yeah, we have a puppet house, and then the band is kind of in the wings, so you can see that. But I mean, it's kind of just like our version of an orchestra pit. I mean, originally, when we first started, the band was up in a balcony. That was just because of the venue we were at. But we tend to put it on stage, also because, like, people... Not only because it has that whole rock show element to it, but also sometimes like people will say, like, you know, watching the band crack up is how you know the actors have tossed the script out and like done something else altogether, you know, which we've tended to recruit really talented improv comedy artists. So like sometimes, I mean, the show's supposed to be 2 hours. In Seattle one time it went 3 because they just added so much to the script. That was definitely way too much. We got a few complaints, but like they veer off topic, off script all the time, and you can usually tell by like how much I'm cracking up, because it goes some places, you know.
Yeah. How do the shows go from an idea to the sort of fully produced stage show that we're going to see in Buffalo?
I think it's like anything. It's like something captures your attention or your imagination for whatever reason, and you just sort of like hammer it out. With the scripted ones, the long form scripted features, it's usually been I write something, you know, then we'll like workshop it a little bit, and it just, you know, and as we perform, it sort of like settles into a little bit more shape and everything. We've got a couple programs of shorts that we've derived from like sort of improv comedy, where we were just like goofing around and we're like, oh, that was fun. Let's do something with that. Like, we had a great comedy sketch where it was like all the puppets doing like slam poetry, you know, but it's like slam poetry from the perspective of a mummy, you know, where they just come on and they're like, oh, brains, delicious. You know, sort of, you know, things like that. Or so it kind of depends on the piece, but I mean, I imagine it's not really that different from, you know, how you would develop any other stage musical, other than we're kind of doing it outside of like, you know, we're kind of doing it on our own, like in a DIY framework, which is to some degree just a product of necessity. We don't have like a big Broadway producer or anything like that. This is the equivalent of a, you know, like a DIY, it's like Fugazi if they were a puppet theater group, you know. It's like a,
I think that needs to be the tagline. That's pretty excellent. How do you assemble all the cast members and the band members?
Well, like I said, you know, the first time it was, I just tapped the right person on the shoulder and they kind of called in some of their friends, and then I kind of called in some of my friends, and you know, we just happened to assemble the right group. But then once you start doing it, it's like people see it and then they want to be a part of it. And, you know, it's like the more you perform, the more people who are interested in that sort of thing kind of clock it and then sort of come to you. But I mean, sometimes we hold open auditions, but most of the best people are ones that have direct one-for-one recruitments, because we've just met them along the way, or we've picked them up, or, you know, musicians, it's like there's a lot of overlap in bands, because it's like one band will play with another band and then you're like, hey, I like your stuff, why don't you come do this? And, you know, and sometimes we'll bring in like a band that we like to be our house band, and then, you know, they'll come along with us or something like that. A lot of the actors we've recruited from the Southern Oregon University theater program, like I said, because it's a very legitimate theater program that's, you know, sort of train people go to because they want to be involved with the Oregon Shakespeare Festival. So we're able to sort of like find a lot of the oddballs who are like, they're really, really talented and they fit within that theater program, but they don't quite fit within, you know, the output of it, where it's like they're good enough, but they're just sort of like interested in other things, you know.
You sent me a documentary. Is it okay if I share that with our listeners and kind of link to it in the show notes?
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
The documentary that you sent was set, or sort of seemed like it was sort of taking place either during 2020 or sort of directly after 2020, and there was sort of a question in it of like, how are we going to bounce back after COVID? I'm so glad 4 years later, like, thank gosh you did, right? But I'm so interested, like, in the time, in that sort of rest time during the pandemic, like, what did you learn and what about the company shifted or changed?
Oh my gosh, so much. I mean, so I think the documentary was made in 2021, perhaps. But I mean, 2020 was turbulent for a lot of us. I mean, we had an entire West Coast tour booked that we had to cancel. And then, as we were sort of, everyone was sort of like hanging out at home or doing whatever. We had largely been a sort of an ensemble based out of Ashland, Oregon. And during the pandemic, a couple of things happened. One, we ran out of like we had to give up our like rehearsal facility that we'd, fought really hard to get because we'd been paying rent on it for to stay empty for 18 months. And at a certain point, it was like, dude, we've sunk $10,000 into this thing. We can't afford to keep it. So that was a pretty brutal blow. And also, a lot of our cast had to, take jobs elsewhere or move in back in with their parents or, things like that. So we kind of like generally dispersed off into, into everywhere. And since we weren't performing, it was harder. We couldn't just like recruit in new people. Like before, it's like we couldn't be like, we did a show, someone saw it, and then they came. They're like, I want to be in your next show. So it kind of had this feeling of like, we have no idea if this is going to work anymore because everyone is all over the country. And, we lost a lot of our resources and we kind of burned through a lot of our cash reserves. And what we did was we decided, okay, let's, just have some conversations and see if we can hack our way out of this. And we, are kind of our leadership team, myself, Katie Curtis, and Alyssa Matthews are kind of the three sort of company managers. We kind of came up with a crazy idea where we're like, what if we can just reinvent this entire thing through like video chat? And it took about 3 months of experimenting to figure out how to do it. And but we came up with this sort of convoluted system of, like taping out the size of the puppet house, like in a, a room, and then having a director talk to the performers through video chat, and then, like having like sort of pre-recorded karaoke demos that the actors could sing along to. And we were able to sort of, hack together this system of rehearsing at least the sort of like most of the early stuff, remotely, so that we could still keep our performers, because it's a pretty specific skill set and you kind of have to develop it over time. Like a lot of our people we worked with consistently, just because you're not going to find someone you can just throw into this. You have to like kind of like train them up a little bit. And so we were like, all right, we figured out this way to work with our cast. Do people still care about this thing? Let's find out. We decided to do this sort of program of like of shorts where it was kind of like a greatest hits, where like, let's pick our favorite songs from the shows we've done and then throw in a couple of little comedy sketches, and then we'll do this as a little fun thing. We'll just do it for 2 weekends, in places that are really easy to do and see if anyone cares. And so we rehearsed this thing over Zoom. We did this thing, and then it turned out, and we did that in, I think, 2023. Yeah, 2022. It's kind of our, we called it like the Back from the Dead. We decided to do Halloween 2022, and it ended up being our most successful show of all time. Like people went insane, like the because partially because I think everyone was just hungry for anything at that point, and also that they were in the same place we were, where like we didn't know if we were coming back, and it was so successful, and we're like, all right, people are still into this. We figured out a system to make it work now. Let's see what we can do. So we decided to bring back Cthulhu the Musical, which had historically been our most popular show because there's such a big fandom around H.P. Lovecraft and, Cthulhu. We were like, all right, let's do this as a big old West Coast tour and see what happens. And we did the whole thing and we went all in and did a whole new production of it, really leaned into some of the multimedia elements, the video projections and shadow puppetry and the lighting, and brought in a whole new band. And then we did that in 2023, did like 7 weeks all over, the West Coast, and people loved it. And so we're like, all right, the goal has always been, let's see if we can get this thing national, get to New York. We've done the West Coast 4 or 5 times now. We've sold out LA, Portland, Seattle, San Francisco, Boise, Reno. Let's see if we can try Chicago, New York, see what they think. And so that's what we're doing now. And it's what's bringing us to you guys in Buffalo, which we're very excited about.
No, I think that is incredible. So you're bringing Cthulhu the Musical to Buffalo. H how would you describe this? If someone has no idea, if they just sort of hear these words, what would you say to them to sort of describe what it is?
No, you say Cthulhu and people are like, Gesundheit. Which if so, for the uninitiated, Cthulhu is a monster. It was created by a fairly famous horror writer by the name of H.P. Lovecraft. H.P. Lovecraft basically invented what is known as cosmic or psychological horror within the sort of history of like horror as a genre. He's pretty much up there with Poe, Stephen King, as like amongst the probably the top five most important slash influential writers of the entire genre. And his most infamous creation is this character Cthulhu, who's a sort of a psychic elder god who sleeps beneath the ocean and drives people insane through their dreams. Lovecraft's whole thing was basically the idea that horror came from, you know, like psychological torment, and that oftentimes the source of that was like knowledge. No, if you knew too much, you just went crazy, and it, you know, was terrifying. And he was a very problematic writer. He was a very racist man. There's, you know, his legacy is quite complicated, but that idea of psychological horror that he introduced was revolutionary. He also did not really copyright any of his stuff, so a lot of it's sort of been in the public domain. So it's sort of like infamously out there for being, you know, like republishable, and you can kind of do what you want with it. Like I said, sometimes it's just about looking for what it is that captures your imagination about a show. And a lot of times I would just be like, when we started doing this, I'm like, all right, this is going to be a company. I got to generate, you know, like a 5-season outline or something, you know. And I would just sort of start throwing ideas out to see how people react to them. And it was like a little game where I just add the words, the musical, to things to see how people would react, you know. And at one point I just said the words, yeah, Cthulhu, the musical. And then like 3 people turned to me and they're like, where can I see that? And I was like, fall here, I guess. And then they're like, you know, okay. So then we had to go and write it. But the thing about this story, if you've never read the original story by H.P. Lovecraft, you're only familiar with the character, or you have no idea what I'm talking about, it's honestly a kind of it's badly written story. Like Lovecraft he was very good at writing atmosphere and tone, but like his grasp on plot was a little more tenuous. And so this story is sort of like, it's like a guy going through his uncle's papers he's reading through someone else's papers about this third hand. So it's like this, like, 4 stories removed from, and you know, this, that's basically about this sort of voyage at sea. So it really doesn't have like characters, or the characters are a little thin. It doesn't really have like a plot arc or like a central conflict or anything like that, but it has these great themes and this great sort of like central idea. So it was actually both an incredible challenge, and it gave a lot to play with. You know, because we kind of had to invent some of that stuff whole cloth, but we wanted it to be a sincere adaptation of the original short story, because that's not something you see very often. So we did a 100% sincere musical comedy take on this story that is not at all funny. And, you know, it's definitely, and its musicality is, you know, like, it's, you don't read this and go like, oh, this should be a musical. Like, you read it and you go, oh, this should be like the liner notes in a heavy metal album, but you don't really, you know, think of it as musical comedy. And so it was a real challenge, but it was a lot of fun, because like I said, puppets open up all these opportunities. And because it was such a sort of ridiculous premise at the start, we were able to, like, you know, like, lean in. And I think that, you know, we did a pretty good job. People seem to like it so far. And it gave us a lot to work with, because it did have this, like, he created a framework that we could then sort of say, all right, like, how do we really make this into a gripping, thrilling narrative? And it had a kind of a Heart of Darkness structure to it, where it's like there's this sort of thing that you're just progressing to and progressing to and progressing to. And it just, you know, as you get towards, it's like the bottleneck narrows, you know, which is great dramatic tension, you know? And so that we got to play with that a lot, and it just gave a lot of latitude. It's a sincere musical comedy exploration of the nature of psychological torment and fear, and, you know, with a lot of, you know, monster comedy mixed in.
It's amazing.
And it's got it's got some real banging sing-alongs, and there's like fun, sassy pirates.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sold. Like, the day it was sort of announced, I bought 2 tickets. Like, I was like,
oh, wonderful.
And that's so when I reached out and thought, hey, maybe I can get them on the podcast before they sort of start this epic tour. So thank you so much for agreeing. What's your hope for the future for Puppeteers for Fears?
You know, for a number of years, we have been hoping / trying to maybe transition it to being like a, tried to pitch it as a TV show. Like, I have this dream of a TV show that's sort of like Twilight Zone meets the Muppets, you know, where we would do like a half hour sort of creature of the week mini musical. And, you know, we've had a couple meetings about it with people, but it hasn't gone anywhere yet. But I mean, honestly, this was our big thing. We always wanted to actually do a full national tour, you know, because like the West Coast, it's like, don't get me wrong, I love the West Coast. I'm West Coast to the fucking bone, but you know, we're off in our own little thing. And it's like, you know, the country is much bigger and more complex, and we wanted to see if it played in Peoria, as they say, you know. And I think that it will, and we wanted to sort of get out there and try it everywhere and see what happens, and, you know, really just keep at it. You know, like, we have a bunch of other original shows, and we've got a bunch more in the cooker. And, you know, I want to just keep bringing this to out there to the world and have it having so much. It's so much fun. It's so much fun to do, and it's so much fun to take part in. And, you know, I just want it to keep going, because it's like when you find that special magic thing, you're like, you just want to ride the wave, you know, and right now I'm just want to ride the wave.
That's awesome. I sort of, as you were speaking, I was like thinking, man, I really hope that one day Puppeteers for Fears does like a rock musical version of Coriolanus on the Oregon Shakespeare Center stage. I think that that would be delightful and something I'd have to fly out to see.
What we actually did, and because, you know, like I said, we're in a Shakespeare town, was we did the puppet comedy roast of William Shakespeare. And the big joke was that, you know, and normally in a comedy roast, you know, at the end, the person who's you've been roasting gets a chance to get up and like respond. And then right when he was about to get up to respond, we're like, yeah, you've had enough stage time in Southern Oregon anyway. You don't get to say anything else. And we cut him off. And so he never gets to respond. So it's basically just, you know, like 20 minutes of jokes about, you know, how juvenile Romeo and Juliet is, or Coriolanus, more like cornhole Uranus, you know, or something. I don't remember.
It's pretty low hanging. Yeah. No, it's ripe. It's ripe for the picking. Well, listen, those are my questions. Thanks so much for your time. I always like to end my interviews by asking, is there anything you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
Do you like to make sure that people are aware that like, this is a puppet show, but it is not intended as a kid's show. There's a lot of times that is something that's confusing. You know, like Jim Henson talked a lot about like the concept of puppet bias, you know, where like in a lot of the rest of the world, puppets are really seen as like just a theatrical medium. But here in America, it's really seen as like a children's medium. And that is a thing that you have to kind of like overcome if you're trying to make anything, you know, like a little more sophisticated. And it's a thing that's a little tricky, but I do think one of the reasons this has caught on with people is a lot of people grew up loving something like the Muppets, but then they didn't, like the material didn't necessarily age with them as they got older. And for us, you know, we're saying, okay, well, what if we did something that's like, you know, speaks to people now where they're at? But, you know, we do definitely have people who show up with their like 6-year-olds and we're like, look, here's the thing. I don't want to tell anyone how to parent. Like, it's your business. I don't really think there's anything in the show that's specifically like you know, young kids are gonna be like, oh God, now I'm ruined for life or anything like that. But they do tend to get bored because this is a 2-hour show about like the nature of existential dread. And it's hilarious, but it's also, you know, it really like below a certain age, kids tend to get bored. So, you know, it's not a children's show. What I generally say is, you know, under 8 will probably get bored and you may end up having to leave because they're just going to get fussy. 8 to 12, they will have some of the jokes will probably fly over their head while you kind of cringe and go, oh God, I hope they don't get that. But they'll have a great time. You know, 13, high school age, they will 100% pick up some catchphrases and new curse words. You hope that you don't want them repeating. And then, you know, but they'll have a great time. But I do like to make clear that it is not a kid show, but all are welcome. But, you know,
awesome. Great. Well, it was so nice to meet you. So nice to connect with you. And I really look forward to seeing the show when it comes to Buffalo. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Daniel. I really appreciate you talking with us today.
I hope you will see Cthulhu the Musical at Buffalo Ironworks. Tickets are available at buffaloironworks.com.
This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Sarah Potter engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides, posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.